Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I'm Cy Kellett, your host. Having a great Monday. We got to talk about Eastern Catholicism last hour. This hour, we get to talk about fiction with Mark Brumley, the president of Ignatius Press, the most influential, important, and how shall I say, trend-setting Catholic publisher in the entire Alpha Quadrant. Mark Brumley, thanks for being with us.
I am happy to be with you. Happy to be in the Alpha Quadrant. The other quadrants are kind of dangerous places, but Alpha Quadrant, it's cool.
Yeah, it is. The Alpha Quadrant is definitely cool. Yeah. It's where all the cool people hang out. I mean, so.
And all the great writers like you, who's just published a new book.
Thank you for mentioning that. That makes me feel super happy. I did. I published a new book. I still can't believe it, but it's out.
So I'm interviewing you now. So what? Tell us about your book.
But the problem is, it is not a work of fiction. It is decidedly a work of nonfiction. As a matter of fact,
that's right.
Because the whole idea of it, and it's called A Teacher of Strange Things. The whole idea of it is that people are not conversant in Jesus at all. Like, there's large parts of our population now that would have, even, 60 years ago, would have gotten at least the basics of who Jesus is, when he lived, what he did, right, what he taught. But there's people now, many, many millions, who they don't get any Bible school, any church. It's right. Not talked about at home.
Right.
And they are adults. And they don't know Jesus. So that's what this book is for, just to give you. Excellent. That's why I could write it, is because it's not a complicated, it's a basic introduction to the person of Jesus.
Cool.
Yeah.
I'm excited.
I am too.
What's our topic today?
We're mushy with topics with you. You could pretty much come on and talk about whatever you want. You're Mark Brumley, after all. But
yes.
You and I are both lovers of fiction. And
yes,
there's an important role that fiction plays in our spiritual lives, in the flourishing of our spirits, and in our intellectual lives. So there is a role that fiction plays in explaining and defending the faith, I suppose, which is apologetics. Would you agree with that?
I would agree. And the reason I asked that question, other than, to let our audience know what we're talking about,
yeah,
is we've talked about your book on Jesus, but we didn't mention your other book.
Yeah. Oh, because I wrote a novella. Yeah, I wrote probably the only novella ever about a bishop who was born on Mars and had to come visit the Pope on Earth.
See?
It's probably.
Yeah. So it's fiction and it's about the faith. So see, my transition was not abrupt. There was nothing to my madness.
You're very, very good. And you publish fiction, and I think you are quite selective in the fiction you publish. And just, this is not any old nonsense. There's a theme to the fiction
right.
you publish.
It's highly, very good nonsense. No, not just any old nonsense.
Yeah.
No, we publish fiction. There, this is a really great time in many respects in Catholic publishing. It's great because there's a lot of competition. So I don't know how great that is. No, I mean, for the good of the church, it's great that there's competition. Even
right.
Catholic Answers, you guys are publishing really great stuff. And, there was a time when there were maybe, three or four notable Catholic publishers, with solidly Catholic stuff, and that was it. And then there, in the 90s and the 2000s, Catholic publishing really, really has, taken off big time. And that includes fiction. I used to say that, something is happening in the Catholic world of fiction when you start getting a lot of bad manuscripts, bad novels.
Really? Yeah. Because people
yes.
know that there are outlets for publishing.
They know that, and it means that people are trying. And the more people try, the more likely you're going to get good manuscripts. And even the people that are writing subpar manuscripts will keep practicing and get better and better and better. And so that's where we are now. There's just this real renaissance in Catholic publishing. In fact, I got lots of notes today, because I need notes to tell me when to shut up. lots of notes today, and I made a note that we have an article on Catholic World Report which has to do with the Renaissance in Catholic literature, including Catholic fiction. So I want to encourage people to go to CatholicWorldReport.com, and you know they're going to find a wonderful article there that deals with the subject of this Renaissance in Catholic fiction. And Rhonda Franklin Ortiz, who's the founder, I think, of, or at least an editor, at a new publishing company called Chrism Press. So it's just a huge, I mentioned this Renaissance of Catholic publishing, lots of new Catholic publishers out there doing all kinds of things, including fiction. So I want to get that out there. But you're right, Ignatius Press, we publish a lot of fiction. Probably our lead novelist, you know, living novelist, is Michael O'Brien. We have a lot of other, you know, novels we published over the years. And we've got lots of younger novelists coming out now. I feel a little bit like, you know, the dad asked to talk about his kids. You know, you don't want to start talking too much because you don't want to leave somebody out or leave something out. But yeah, this is a real renaissance in Catholic fiction. And I think it's really important for apologetics. I mean, that article I mentioned to you by Rhonda Ortiz, she says there, you know, the Catholic writer, the Catholic artist is not an apologist. And by that, she means that the primary purpose of writing fiction is it shouldn't be apologetics. It should be, you know, the art for the value of the art and telling of the story for the value of telling the story. That doesn't mean that literature or fiction can't help in apologetics. And I'm going to say there's Christian fiction, there's non-Christian fiction, and both can play a role in Catholic apologetics. And I hope in the course of
what a
this
great
hour,
point. Yeah.
For that.
Yeah, very, very helpful point. Our number is 888-318-7884 if you want to ask questions about this, Mark Brumley calls a renaissance in Catholic fiction. You're welcome to call and ask about that. But if you have other questions about the place of fiction in a spiritual life and about this thing that Mark just mentioned, that there's an apologetic role for both Catholic and non-Catholic, Christian and non-Christian literature, 888-318-7884. Were you guys the original publisher of Father Elijah and Apocalypse?
Yes.
Because that was a real groundbreaker. Yeah.
That was.
That the thing is, I think there's a certain way in which some writers ran away from being Catholic novelists because they didn't want to be thought of as devotional novelists. And others ran towards being called Catholic novelists because that's what they were. They were devotional novelists. And many of those books weren't very, very good. There are these odd figures that pop up every now and then, like Miles Connelly writing Mr. Blue. But
Mr. Blue. But that's my favorite. Now people are gonna kill me when I say this, but Mr. Blue is my favorite Catholic bad good novel.
I know but it's not a bad novel though.
It's not a bad novel. I didn't say
no.
It was
no,
a bad
I know
novel.
That's right. I know you didn't. But it's an intriguing novel, Mr. Blue, and it meant so much to a generation. You know, like I think what generation would it be? The generation that were adults in the 1950s, I think, would be the
right 50s.
Yeah,
by bad good novel, I mean it doesn't do all the things that you're supposed to do when you write, you know, like a good novel type.
Right.
That doesn't do all. It does some of them. And it does some things that from, you know, a school marmish point of view, you don't do when you're right. There's a style that he has where he repeats himself a lot and all of that. And some people will just like they cringe when they read that. And when I first read it, I cringed too. But then I read it again and again and I thought, no, this works.
It does.
And this really will come up because you know, there is in this this article that Rhonda Ortiz wrote where she takes up the subject of popular fiction. You know, we have this idea of literary fiction and popular fiction. And there is a distinction, but you can't press it too firmly.
Yeah.
And some of the best literature is popular literature and some of the worst literature is literary fiction.
Yeah.
And that's just the way it is, you know?
Yeah. Well, try to write a sentence better than Elmore and Leonard. And everyone would say that's pop fiction, but you can't write sentences better than that guy can write sentences.
That's right. So there's something to be said for that. I got to ask you a question, though, because you just wrote a book, so you're an expert now.
I am.
So I'm going to ask you a question. So who would you say is the best storyteller in Christianity?
Well, I mean, it's a trick question. Jesus is the best storyteller in Christianity.
Exactly.
What if I had gotten that wrong, though? You would have just humiliated me in public.
I would have, since you just wrote a book about Jesus.
Jesus is the best storyteller in the history of the world.
Yeah, and when you stop and think about that, you know, he's the best storyteller. And of course, there are two kinds of stories. There's fictional stories and they're true stories, and he's a great fictional storyteller with his parables, and of course he's a great true storyteller because the whole history of creation is his story, right?
Amen.
History, and he wrote it, and we're his characters, and so Jesus is the great storyteller. Now I mention that because sometimes people will say, well, you know, apologetics, you know, that's really rational defense of the faith. What's fiction got to do with that? And I want to say Jesus made the case, as it were, for his authority, his teaching authority. How? Well, he had a lot of sayings and a lot of teaching and all that. But one of the central ways in which he communicated the truth to people was through telling stories. So we can too.
Yeah, and I feel like maybe we'll do this when we come back because we have to take a quick break, Mark. But I feel like if you're going to defend fiction as having apologetic potential, you have to defend. You have to almost do an apologetic of fiction. Like, why even read fiction to the modern person? Because many people would say, "Well, that's just, you know, STEM. Let's just do STEM. We'll teach STEM." I don't hate STEM, but I kind of hate STEM partly because I can't do math, but partly because this idea of STEM it involves, I will argue, a very limited view of what human flourishing is. And I'm sorry that I have to leave it
so
there.
Before,
okay, go ahead.
Okay, no. But when we come back, you have to tell us what STEM is.
Okay, we'll do that when we come back with Mark Brumley. We're talking about fiction and our Christian faith. We'll be right back after this.
There's only one Catholic Answers Live. The Aquinas Writing Advantage Program is part of Homeschool Connections' set of online courses for your Catholic homeschool. Homeschool Connections' website is homeschoolconnections.com.
You need to pray. There's two things I want you to do. Keep close to our Lord in the Holy Eucharist. He's really and truly present. Body, blood, soul, and divinity. Stay close to his mother. With those two loves, you will always have the light to see what is right and what is wrong.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I'm Cy Kellett, your host, getting to talk to Mark Brumley, the president of Ignatius Press. You can find them at Ignatius.com. Is that right? Ignatius.com?
That's it.
Seems
Ignatius.
So simple and straightforward. Yeah, Ignatius.com. They got movies. They got fiction. They got nonfiction. They got some of the best books in the history of the world over there. One thing, I was mentioning Michael O'Brien's book. I don't remember if it was the first one in the whole Father Elijah series, but Father Elijah and Apocalypse. What I wanted to say about that, Mark, that I forgot to conclude was that it does seem to me that it opened up a new avenue for the Catholic novelist, just unapologetically Catholic, just like I'm writing Catholic novels.
Yes, and of course, Michael does all kinds of things. I mean, he does novels that are like directly, I want to say in your face, that's the wrong connotation, but in your face Catholic stuff. But he also does other stuff that's more indirect, and you know, so that takes us in the direction of different ways of being a storyteller as a Catholic. Some Catholic writers don't like being called Catholic writers, not because they don't have a Catholic vision, but they don't want their fiction to be perceived as limited.
Yeah.
And really, it shouldn't be, because Catholic means universal.
Right.
And there are lots of reasons why a Catholic vision is something that can inform a wide range of genres of writing.
Yeah.
And so anyway,
well,
we talked about STEM.
STEM, science, technology, engineering, and math as the core of what students should be taught.
Right.
For some reason, especially obsessing on girls, getting girls to be STEM. Probably, I guess, because there's an underrepresentation of girls in all of those areas to the mind of some folks. But and I'm not objecting to STEM, as I do believe like we need science, technology, engineering, and math. But I don't believe that those are the keys to human flourishing. And the fact that we don't have music classes for kids and we don't have great literature for kids is actually bad, not good.
Right. It's a danger because, you know, we go back to the whole C.P. Snow, two cultures, the humanistic culture, the scientific culture. And the danger is that, you know, scientific culture, especially technology that can be, you know, sweeping in its impact on human beings. If we don't have human beings well formed in understanding what it means to be human and how to flourish as a human being, then that technology can be a big threat. On the other hand, you know, part of living a good human life is to use the intellect that God has given us to be able to affect our environment, to foster human flourishing. So these things need to go together. But I just wanted to start with a little story here. Many years ago, I was giving a talk somewhere. I think it's probably when I was working at Catholic Answers. Probably was. I was giving a talk somewhere, and I happened to just, you know, mention in passing François Mauriac, who is a French Catholic writer, won the Nobel Prize for Literature back in, I think, 1958, back in the day when Catholic novelists won the Nobel Prize for Literature.
Sure,
He wrote a book called Woman of the Pharisees. And I just happened to, I don't know, I was giving a talk on something and I used an example from that book. I can't even remember what the example was. And I mentioned the book in passing. And in the Q&A, or it was after the Q&A, this lady came up to me and she said, oh, thank you so much for mentioning François Mauriac and the book Woman of the Pharisees. That book brought me into the Catholic Church. Now, this is a novel.
Right.
Written about, you know, about a French Catholic woman who is kind of a bit of a Pharisee, and she winds up getting her comeuppance and undergoes conversion herself. And this woman said to me, what really attracted her about Catholicism through the lens of that book was that Mauriac understood the human heart. He understood sin. He understood the temptation of many good religious people in the Pharisaic direction, and the insights that woman had gotten from reading that novel, she said, were more important than any of the arguments that she'd ever read from, you know, Catholic Answers or heard from any of the apologists.
Sure.
And I remember that, and I've used that story time and again to talk about the power of fiction to help. Now, she still had objections and questions that had to be addressed. But that book, Woman of the Pharisees, had given her insight into a Catholic imaginative world. And that coupled with, you know, actual answers to her questions about purgatory and things of that sort, made it easier for her to come into full communion with the Catholic Church.
There is something about fiction, and I actually think there's something that fiction can do to you that happens on an unconscious level. And I don't mean to get all Freudian on you, but it's just there's something about stories that are formative in a way that arguments are not formative of the soul. So that a great storyteller changes your soul in a way that a great arguer cannot.
Right. Yeah, it's hard. As somebody who argues a lot, there are mechanisms that come into play when you get into the argumentative mode, defenses that come up, and people can be persuaded and all of that, but it's much more difficult. What happens when you read a novel or you see a film, and it raises these questions of faith and meaning and human purpose and all of that, it can get around some of the barriers, and then it allows you, and I think I've talked about this in seven deadly sins of Catholic apologetics, when I talk about the deadly sin of reducing the faith to arguments and reducing the faith to apologetics and reducing apologetics to arguments, because it's really almost like a transformation of vision that happens when you have a conversion. And the imaginative realm, it's funny, Frank Sheed in Theology and Sanity characterizes the intellect or the imagination as oftentimes, not always, but oftentimes the enemy of the intellect, because our inability to picture something can be a barrier for our thinking it's true. You know, can't picture God, so maybe there isn't a God, that kind of thing. But at the same time, Sheed, who was very well read in literature and in fact is a brilliant writer, knows the power of imagination as well to take us to places where sometimes the sort of bare bones argumentation can't take us. And so that's the power of literature, can open up our mind's eye to see things differently and get around some of these intellectual barriers.
I want to go to the calls, Mark, and I don't want to monopolize you, because it's very tempting to monopolize you, because I really truly enjoy talking with you. But at some point before we end, I want to ask you, as an editor, as a publisher, to help the person who might want to write novels, to give your basic advice about, look, this is how you get a manuscript that's something we'd be fascinated with, rather than we'd go, ah, ho-hum. But we'll get to that, okay? But I just want to tease that.
I'll do my best.
Okay. I got to go. Let's go to the callers, and let's go to Indianapolis, listening on EWTN. Jim in Indianapolis, thanks so much for your call. Jim, go ahead with your question for Mark Brumley.
Hello. I heard that the subject was fiction, and I didn't limit it to books, so...
Ah, good. Well, then you'll make Mark happy, because Mark is willing to talk about any kind of fiction. He's got that big view.
Wonderful. Well, I didn't enjoy... Well, say I didn't experience the Daredevil comic books, but the Netflix series, I really enjoyed the portrayal of Catholicism with Father Lantham, and I was wondering if you experienced that as well, and if you had any comments on how that was presented and what you felt about it.
Wonderful question.
Yeah, it's been a while since I've seen the Daredevil series, but my recollection of it is that it was done reasonably well. You know, as a lot of Catholics who watch things, and there's Catholicism in the media, you never quite know what you're going to get. Even instances where they're trying to do something good, sometimes they flub it up big time, and then of course many times they're not trying to do anything good. I thought Catholicism and Daredevil was reasonably good, and the fact is it took the series took Daredevil's Catholic faith seriously, and he grappled with a lot of things. He was you know, struggling with doubts, and he was angry with God, and there was a whole storyline where he had to deal with that. And then because he had dealt with it to some degree, he could then help one of the other characters, the Punisher, who is very angry and bent on vengeance. He could help him at least find a respite in his vengeance. So I think it was done very well, reasonably well, for what the series, limited run TV series on Netflix type of thing. So
I hope that
do you agree with that?
I do. Thank you very much.
You know what? I think you – oh, go ahead. I thought you were done. Go ahead, caller. Go ahead with your comment.
I was just saying yes.
Oh, okay, Jim. I think you could do a great book just on the best depictions of a Catholic priest on film, because this was a very good depiction of a Catholic priest on film. But it's almost like if you can get a Catholic priest right, you know you got a good work of fiction or a good – like there's something about the ministry of the priesthood. I don't know if you remember, George Clooney made a movie called The American in which he played an assassin and who goes and talks to a priest. Do you know this movie?
I'm vague. I think I saw that movie on an airplane, and I vaguely remember it.
Well, there's an Italian actor whose name I won't be able to tell you, an old Italian who plays the priest, and some reason he understands priesthood, and it's the assassin talking to the priest, and the priest – very gently, but with great spiritual power, fighting for the soul of this man who he knows is going to hell. And it was a beautiful depiction of a priest and the function of a priest. I'm glad you asked that question because that's, I mean, that's be a whole thing. We could do a whole show just about priests in fiction, you know, get some Graham Greene in there, get some of these great film priests. Now I hear the music. All right, we're talking about fiction and apologetics. Mark Brumley is our guest. Mark is the president of Ignatius Press, the most significant Catholic publisher in this part of the galaxy. We will continue with your questions for Mark and some of my questions for Mark after this on Catholic Answers Live.
This is Archbishop Salvatore Cordiglione of San Francisco. Thank you for listening to Catholic Answers Live.
Have you enrolled in the Catholic Answers School of Apologetics? Let me ask you a more important question. Do you believe as a Catholic that you have an obligation to share the Catholic faith? In fact, the Church has answered this question, and the answer is that all confirmed Catholics are obliged to share the faith. It's actually in canon law. Catholic Answers is here to help you fulfill that obligation. Our School of Apologetics courses will equip you to help all the people you come in contact with understand what the Church teaches and why. A great place to start is with all the Catholics in your life. Learn the art of apologetics from the best of the best and start sharing the gospel today. Visit schoolofapologetics.com. That's schoolofapologetics.com.
Did you know you can access Catholic Answers Live right from your phone or other mobile device? Download the Catholic Answers Live app today. The Catholic Answers Live app, available now on iOS and Android.
Most of us Catholic parents agree our number one goal in life is to pass on the faith to our children. But here's the bad news. Today's world has a million ways to steal your kid's soul. Don't be afraid, says Father Sebastian Walsh. God loves your children even more than you do, and he desires their salvation more than anything. In his groundbreaking new book, Always a Catholic, Father Walsh shows you how to cooperate with God to bring about the fulfillment of his will for your kids. Always a Catholic reminds us that keeping our kids in the faith is about the way we live our Catholicism in our own lives and as a family from day to day. Order your copy of Always a Catholic by visiting shop.catholic.com today or ask for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
I'm Jerry Usher.
And I'm Debbie Giorgiani.
Join us for Take Two with Jerry and Debbie at noon Eastern with an encore at midnight Eastern.
Now back to Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live, talking with Mark Brumley, the president of Ignatius Press, that publishes all kinds of magnificent books, including a growing number of fiction titles, because as Mark was saying, there's a growing number of fiction titles available to publish, more people writing Catholic fiction. If you have questions in that regard, 888-318-7884, 888-318-7884. I'm going to go to Ashley. Go ahead, Mark.
Oh, no, we can go to Ashley, but I want you to share your exchange with me during the break at some point about Gene Wolfe, the Catholic sci-fi fantasy writer. So
I will.
You're brilliant.
Share that. My brilliant insight into Gene Wolfe, whose brilliance is the thing is, though, Mark, I said this to you just before we came back on the air. I am one of those people who falls in love with a writer. Like if a writer can do it and can get into my heart and soul, I just fall in love with that person. And maybe I overdo it in my love for him. I mean, I have been literally in love with Walker Percy since about 1980. Like I just love Walker Percy.
I don't know if I ever told you my Walker Percy story, but if we get time.
If you met Walker Percy, my heart is. Oh, come on.
So
I loved him and you met him. All right. We're going to go to Ashley in Texas.
I'll tell you the story, but we need to go to Ashley.
All right. Ashley listening on Guadalupe Radio. Thank you so much for waiting, Ashley. Go ahead with your question for Mark Brumley.
Hi. My name is Ashley. Sorry. I was wondering about, there's lots of independent Catholic authors that are out there, and one of my favorites is Jacqueline Brown. She writes the Into the Light series. It's a dystopian fiction series about what life would be like as a Catholic if the world suddenly wasn't how we knew it. That was just like my question, like, what's the difference between independently publishing your works and writing your own works versus getting a publisher to publish your work?
And so you called a publisher to ask him. He's gonna yeah. say, he's none of these people should be publishing independently. They should all, go ahead, Mark.
No, I'm not going to say that. Okay. First of all, actually, thank you for the question. Yeah, I mean, by and large, obviously, as a publisher, I favor, you know, professional publishing and all of that. But there's nothing wrong with self-publishing or creating your own brand and doing all of that. And there have been some good writers over the years that have kind of done that. And I wouldn't say that's a bad thing. There are disadvantages to it, because then the whole burden of promoting your book and getting it out in front of people, you know, falls on you. And also, you know, it's always good to have someone else who can read through your manuscript and critique it. You know, I regard publishing as a partnership between the author and the publisher. And so that's always a good thing. But there's nothing wrong or inappropriate. Sometimes people look down upon self-published books, and that's because sometimes self-published books lack quality, because sometimes the authors were not able to get published by a publisher, and so they self-publish. But that is not always the case by any stretch of the imagination. So I think that there are lots of forms that publishing can take, including, you know, self-publishing. So I don't want to discourage anybody.
Thanks very much, Ashley. Appreciate the question. I'm sure that Jacqueline Brown appreciates the question as well. There are an increasing number of these Catholic writers exchanging novels online and creating a reading community. I think it's wonderful to have a reading community. And the thing that happens to you, though, Mark, is eventually you read Willa Cather. And then nothing.
That's right.
Then everything has to be good after that. You know what I mean? Like, if you read enough, eventually you get to Willa Cather, and you don't want to read any second-rate stuff anymore.
Yeah, you know, what I'll say about this. First of all, we've been throwing out a lot of names, and that sounds very highfalutin and very literary.
Well, no.
And people that are not familiar with these
My
names
Antonia.
Shouldn't be intimidated. Pardon me?
My Antonia.
That's right. But you know, death comes for the Archbishop.
Yeah.
You know, throwing out novels and authors and all of that. First of all, I want to say, and I say this, I try to be objective. I'm not saying this because I'm a publisher. I'm a publisher because this is the sort of thing I would say. I think it's important that people read,
Amen.
Not just watch TV or listen to the radio. We're on the radio. God bless the radio. Not just go see movies. But read, because there's a whole set of experiences that come with reading that you don't get watching movies or watching TV. Watching TV is great. You know, Father Fessio has this line. He's not a big movie guy. We've kind of over the years, Father Fessio is the founder of Ignatius Press. We've kind of over the years kind of coaxed him into watching more movies, and he does that more than he used to. But he used to, you know, we have this saying, a picture is worth 1,000 words. And Father says, a single word is worth 1,000 pictures. And what he means by that is that when you read a book, you bring your life experience, your imagination to bear, and you are sort of a co-author with the writer of the story as it appears in your mind and so on. I want to encourage people to read novels because it can expand our way of thinking about the world and can give us all kinds of powerful tools to present a Catholic vision to people. Now, having said that, I want to ask you, Cy, can you identify the most influential work of fiction that you've ever read, or maybe a couple influential works of fiction?
Yeah, because I read them young. And so it's like, you know, a small adjustment in the beginning has a big result in the end. And I may have told you this before. When I was in eighth grade over Easter break, because my friend Matt gave me a copy of them, I read voraciously, unstoppably read the three Lord of the Rings books. And I've never been the same since. I know about Tolkien's shortcomings and his graces and all that, but it's nothing. There's nothing like being 13 years old or 12 years old or whatever you are in eighth grade, and your mind being blown by a book that is suffused with a Catholic imagination. And so I do credit even much of my life as a Catholic to Tolkien.
Right. No, I think Tolkien, that's a great story. I had a similar thing when I was sophomore in high school over Christmas break, not Easter break. I got the Chronicles of Narnia, and I read all seven of those books. And it was life transforming for me. I was a new Christian. And the idea that you could express a Christian worldview and the mysteries of the Christian faith and all of that through fiction was just revolutionary for me. And then, I went on to read C.S. Lewis's Space Trilogy, you know, the three books out of the Silent Planet, Perelandra, That Hideous Strength, read those in high school. I was a big sci-fi reader.
Yeah.
At that time, and you know, Sheldon Van Auken, who wrote this wonderful book, A Severe Mercy, about he and his wife's experience and conversion to Christian faith. They were friends of C.S. Lewis. His wife dies, and he talks about the experience of her death and so on. But he talks about their years at Oxford, and when they first encountered, I think it was Out of the Silent Planet, the first of Lewis's space trilogies, which is set on Mars. But it takes Christianity seriously as a cosmic religion, right?
Yes.
So the God of the universe is the God of the universe. And it just really floored this young couple, you know, studying at Oxford, that here is this Oxford don, you know, literature guy, writing about science fiction, but doing so in a way that takes seriously God as being behind the universe and everything.
Right.
And it really was a powerful thing for that helped in their conversion, you know, because they thought of science and religion as being at odds, and that a worldview that took into consideration the scientific realities of the solar system would be at odds with Christianity. And here was this Lewis guy undercutting that. You know, and so I had a similar experience, although I read a lot of science fiction. You know, Lewis was very, very important to me, you know, in high school. So anyway, the point is that you can transform somebody's life by giving them a good novel, you know, and sharing a good novel with people.
Right. And do it. Do it. Rebecca in Illinois, listening on 88.5 FM, you are very welcome here. Thank you very much for your call. Go ahead with your question for Mark.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I was wondering if Mr. Brumley could talk about perhaps the role of satire and sort of biting humor in Catholic literature. The authors who spring to mind for me are Evelyn Waugh and Flannery O'Connor. And specifically, there's just as an example, there's a hilarious scene in Evelyn Waugh's Helena, where he basically just makes fun of all the hoity-toity modernist critics of his day. And of course, those kinds of scenes are very funny, and we enjoy them. But now it almost seems like the secular culture has kind of co-opted and has taken satire and biting humor so far that now, you know, there are really no taboos. You can make fun of anything and anybody. And I was wondering if, in your opinion, if that changes maybe what our approach should be in using something like satire.
Oh, that's a very good
Isn't
question.
That great?
You know, Rebecca, I would say there's no one approach to literature. There is a role for satire. Evelyn Waugh is a master at it. and Flannery O'Connor, she was very good at it too, in a very different literary style. We do have to be careful because we can misread satire, or if we're writing satire, we can misapply satire, and instead of being about ideas and extremes and kind of poking fun at the human foibles, we can be understood as attacking persons. And so that we have to be careful about that. But, you know, there is a kind of a foundation for this in the Gospels and in the New Testament, you know, other parts of the New Testament. Some of Jesus's harangues are very funny satire. I mean, you know, when he talks about, and it's very biting thing to talk about, it's easier to go through the eye, for a camel to go through the eye and needle, a rich man enter the kingdom of heaven. When he calls the Pharisees whited sepulchers and broods of vipers. And, you know, some of his parables are just very, very funny. We kind of dress them up with, you know, a kind of respectful piety and out of a way of honoring the Lord. But when that happens, then we kind of lose some of the fun or some of the punch behind it. And then I'm thinking of St. Paul when he was dealing with the party of the circumcision. And he at one point said, you know, these people that are saying you got to be circumcised in order to be a Christian are so crazy, so extreme. I wish they'd go all the way and cut it all the way off. Now, again, when you're reading through it with a kind of sort of pious mindset, you can miss the force of what St. Paul is saying there. But, you know, so this is not an argument for being sarcastic and satirical all the time, nonstop. There are people in our secular culture who do that. There are Catholics who are full speed ahead of that 24/7. Personally, I think some of that needs to be pulled back. But there is a place for it, and it has a value. And there are some people who really have – I know people who have come into the Catholic Church because they – someone like Waugh really resonated yeah. with them. And I don't want to say that that's bad. Now, you also have the other phenomena, what I call the Balaam's ass phenomena. You know, Balaam's ass in the Old Testament book of Numbers. Balaam is this prophet, and he's going to go to Moab, and God doesn't want him to go there. And so God sends an angel, and Balaam's ass keeps, you know, going off the road or trying to not go forward because he sees this angel with a flaming sword. Balaam just keeps beating that ass because he won't do what Balaam wants. And finally, God makes the ass talk and say, why are you mistreating me like this? You know, if you saw what I saw, you would stop too. And then, of course, Balaam's eyes are open. He sees there's an angel there with this flaming sword, and here's a message from God. What in the world do you think you're doing? Well, oftentimes stories, literature, can be a kind of Balaam's ass, that is to say, an unusual messenger. And so we can't, just because somebody benefited from reading something or had a positive experience from something, we can't for that reason say, well, this must be a good thing in and of itself. God can use these things as stepping stones without, you know, underwriting everything in film or in literature that includes some really bad and dark and problematic stuff. All that said, though, I do think there is a place for satire, and I think there's a place for witty criticism and things of that sort.
Okay, Rebecca?
Yes, thank you so much. That's really great to hear. Thank you.
Well, it was nice to talk to both of you, Rebecca, you and the baby.
Oh, that's right.
Yes, sorry about that.
No, that was great. Well, we got to take a break. We'll be right back with more Mark Brumley on Catholic Answers Live.
It's all about the truth. Catholic Answers Live.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects home buyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org.
Wings is the weekly newsletter that's packed with program info, features, and updates of all that's going on at the Global Catholic Network. Just go to EWTN.com/wings. Fill out your name and email address, and you'll start getting your wings every week. When you get yours, send it to all your friends, and they can send it to their friends. And pretty soon, we're covering the whole world with the good news about EWTN. Wings, the weekly newsletter from EWTN, the Global Catholic Network.
Do you want to end abortion, halt the attack on traditional marriage, and ensure religious freedom for ourselves and for our grandchildren? To do this, we must convert the culture. St. Paul's Street Evangelization is a grassroots initiative that recognizes this need and takes it to the streets. If you're interested in peacefully sharing the gospel in your area, visit streetevangelization.com to learn more.
Welcome back. Catholic Answers Live. I'm Cy Kelly, your host. We're talking about fiction and the spiritual effects, the apologetic effects of fiction with Mark Brumley, who's the president of Ignatius Press. The only thing that I'm not one of those people who's read everything by Gene Wolfe, but recently I read the entire, it starts with The Torturer, the Shadow of the Torturer, and it's a science fiction novel about, I don't know, a million years in the future
Book of
or something.
Book of the New Sun
is the whole cycle.
Series.
Yeah. Right. So I read that series. And actually, Mark, part of why I read the series was I realized that for some reason I wasn't reading fiction. I had taken a long time of not reading fiction. And I think partly because it's easier to watch TV or social media or just click around and read Wikipedia or whatnot.
Right.
There's a kind of commitment that comes with fiction. And I realized I was missing something very good in my life. In doing easier kinds of reading or watching movies or whatnot, I was missing out. And so I heard all these great things about Gene Wolfe, this great Catholic science fiction and fantasy writer, and I couldn't believe what I read in Gene Wolfe. I mean, the man is a world-class writer, like world-class. Like I'd put him in a conversation with Flannery O'Connor and Evelyn Waugh in the same conversation. I mean, he's that good. And so I actually had that experience myself of being in my mid-50s and realizing, why did you stop reading fiction? And it's hard. It's hard work in a way.
Yeah, and you got to get back into it. Once you get back into it, it gets easier.
Right. Because
you have to be selective about your read. There's some things that are harder to read and some things easier to read. I think we should mix it up. I think there's the literary fiction and there's the popular fiction.
Sure.
And they all have a place. I want to mention a couple of – I got to talk about these because I'm really excited about it. Okay. You know, Ignatius Press, we publish lots of different kinds of books, lots of different kinds of fiction. And we talked about Michael O'Brien, and I don't want to leave out any of our many fiction writers, but I got to mention a couple books that are kind of different. So we published about 2 years ago a book called Bloody Habit by Eleanor Berg Nicholson. It's a great book because it's about a priest vampire hunter written in, you know, a kind of a late 19th century, early 20th century style of, you know, Dracula type style. People got to read that. It's a lot of fun. I want to mention Fiorella De Maria, who, in addition to being an award-winning novelist, just writes great novels. She is resurrecting the Catholic priest detective in the Father Gabriel mysteries.
Oh.
So you got to get her Father Gabriel mysteries, you know, See No Evil and The Vanishing Woman. I'm trying to remember what the third one is. Anyway, she's got coming out with a book with co-authored by T.V. Turley. They're both English writers, and this book is going to be amazing because it's a work of historical fiction centered on Bela Lugosi. So people need to keep an eye out for that.
Yeah.
It's a Catholic book, man. And then we've got another book by David Pinnell, who is an expert on Islam, wrote the book The Crucifix on Mecca's Front Porch, which is one of the best Catholic books on Islam out there. But he's got a book called Providence Blue, which features characters like H.P. Lovecraft and Edgar Allan Poe. That's coming out too. So,
wow.
Again, these are kind of offbeat Catholic novels, but they're great. A lot of fun, and they're the kind of thing you give to the non-Catholic and just kind of mix it up with them.
Good. I'm so glad. Okay. So Mark, I am going to go back to calls. I said I would ask you before we end, as a publisher, as a person who's read many manuscripts, advice to the person who would like to publish a novel, especially a Catholic novel, advice you'd give them?
It's presumptuous to me because I know what I like, but I'm not an expert on literature and on fiction. I would say, do your best to learn the craft, you know, learning the craft of writing, and just keep trying, submit, you know, and if you submit it to Ignatius Press, we turn you down. Okay. Try to figure out, is there something I need to do to make this better? Who did the Swiftly Tilting Planet book and the...
I do not know. You've got me. I don't know.
Well, I can't think of her name. And she did another... She's another book she's famous for. And if I said it, everybody would know it. And I'm just drawing a blank on it now. But she famous writer.
And is about writing?
And she's talked about how she submitted that book to some... her most famous book, the title of which I'm forgetting right now, she submitted to like 20 different publishers and got turned down, and eventually it was published, and it's one, you know, a famous book.
Madeline L'Engle.
Right. That's right.
Yeah. All right. I got to get a call around with you because I've made him wait. Roseo in Colorado watching on YouTube. Roseo, thank you for your call. Go ahead with your question for Mark Brumley.
Yeah, hi. I actually have been trying to contact Ignatius Press forever. I don't know how many messages I left about the collection that Ignatius Press has about the stories of the saints. Have you translated those into Spanish, or I'm thinking about translating them into Spanish or anything like that?
Not really. We have a few books in Spanish. We're not really a Spanish language publisher. And that's really why, you know, we do have a line of Spanish books, but, you know, just frankly, that there's not a whole lot of demand. We don't reach the Spanish reading market. We're not very good at it, just to be honest. And so that's why we haven't translated a lot of things into Spanish, but there are other Spanish Catholic publishers out there that do a much, much better job.
Roseo, I'm going to leave it there because I want to get this one last question into Mark. Maddie in Denver, Colorado, listening on EWTN radio. And Maddie, you'll have to forgive me. I'm going to read your question because there's so little time. She's a young aspiring author. She wants to write in the young adult genre. Any advice on the young adult genre? Is there anything good there?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I know different things that have been published and are out there and you know, that I've read and that I've liked. You know, I don't have any particular insights. Just do it and submit it. Just write it and submit it. Write it and submit it.
It does seem like the major publishing houses are all about publishing, you know, the most outrageous stuff for young adults now. You know, like almost it's like it's propaganda to get you on board with every secular thing.
Well, I think there's some of that, and this is why we need, you know, good Christian writers, because we need to counter that, you know, have the Christian world.
All right, so Maddie, then don't give up on writing those young adult genre books.
Keep it up.
Because we, as Mark said, we do need Christian writers. I believe I went through a whole hour of talking writing with you, didn't mention the Canticle for Leibowitz. So I believe that's it's one of my favorite books, so I got to mention at least once before we go. Mark Brumley, publisher of Ignatius Press, thanks very much. It's always a great time to spend an hour with you.
Sigh, God bless you.
Tomorrow, 2 hours of open forum, so you don't want to miss that. If you didn't get through today, open forum means you can ask any question you want. You don't have to be Catholic to call. Anybody can call. We'll see you then, God willing, right here on Catholic Answers Live.
example.